This is a letter to my brothers and sisters of faith who, like myself, long for the day where the church is a body instead of a building. So this poem is to the Christians. This is to the Christians who don't have a Sunday's best. This is for the Christian whose Monday through Saturday wardrobe is just as good on Sunday. This is for the Christians who care more about how their soul looks than how their clothes look. This is for those Christians. This is for the Christians who recognize hate is too large of a burden to bear, so they love instead. This is for the Christians who love.
Welcome, welcome, everybody. This is Sharon Smith, and this is Iambic Poetry Podcast, where we talk to poets, artists, and performers of the California region. I am here with none other than the poet, recording artist, activist, powerful individual, and Christian. I give you the man himself, Brandon Lee.
Best intro I've ever had. What's going on, man?
Actually, I was going with God, but then I was like, should I say that or should I not? I don't know. Hey, what's up, man? Come on, fam. And how you been doing? And also, I should say, also family man and loving husband.
Funny, man. I've been getting compliments about my fatherly and husbandly skills a lot recently. It's been funny.
You know why? Because people look at it as an oxymoron. It's like, a good father? And that's even more disturbing because now that's become a thing. And even you and me, we're both, our fathers left us. Well, my father divorced and he went on his way. It's kind of weird when you basically grow up without as a fatherless child, trying to become a man into something that is a little hard to do. So, yeah, I get it.
Yeah.
I definitely get that. But no, man, thanks for coming on the show, man. Thanks for coming on the show and agreeing. I know I kind of caught you at a weird moment. So I'm glad you came on. And it's always funny because you've been one of the ones on my list that I wanted to knock off. Like, okay, I want to get him on the show. Even before the whole America's Got Talent thing came on, I was like, okay, I got so many people I want to get on the show.
Yeah, man. I mean, this has been supposed to happen. It's just been a hectic piece of work trying to get all of our schedules aligned. With everything happening from COVID to people trying to figure out how work schedules go down. When I say people, I mean me.
No doubt, man. I know. But since we're on the subject, I said, man, why don't you tell us about yourself? Tell us about what makes Brandon Lee Brandon Lee. Besides the poem, what makes Brandon Lee Brandon Lee?
Yeah, man. I mean, if I'm being honest with it, like I am nobody special. Just another dude out here, like trying to get life together. You know what I mean? Right. I think probably the thing that makes me most unique is just, I would say my willingness to learn and my drive to improve. Are probably like two very largely redeeming qualities about myself, because I have like this relentless behavior about trying to pursue after what I love, and do something that I feel is like truly, exceptional. And I think that captures a lot of people's attention, in good ways, also in some interesting ways. I think a lot of people look at that and and like feel some type of way about my approach, but yeah, man, I'm just your average Joe trying to continue to live life, one day at a time, loving God and loving people in the process.
But I'm saying, do you think your constant drive is mostly because you used to be in basketball? Back in Simpson University?
Man, I I do. If I'm being honest with it, like, I think that my drive to pursue after excellence is deeply rooted in my experience with, because if I'm being honest with it, like basketball, actually, I would say it's more of a byproduct of that, because basketball was just a proving ground for me to try and prove to myself and to my absentee father that I was worth being loved, okay. If I'm being honest about it. And then what inevitably ended up happening was I used basketball as a way to try and prove to myself that I was worth being loved. And so I would like push myself on the basketball court to try and show the world that like, yo, like Brandon is worth something. And inevitably, in a beautiful way, I was able to let go of those inadequacies. Mm-hmm. But yeah, man, I was able to find a healthy balance between my drive and the ability to try and be still. And when I say healthy balance, I have yet to achieve it. I have just come to the realization that it is necessary. Because I am not one who likes to be still for too long. I am one who loves to continue to try and push and do stuff and all of that. And yeah, it's not always the healthiest, but it is unequivocally a part of Brandon.
So what was your position in basketball?
Yeah, man, I played, well, it depends on what year. If you're talking about like college and stuff, right. I played point guard.
I was assuming guard or point guard. That was either way for me. I thought you were.
Yeah, man, I played point guard my senior year in high school and my 2 years that I played in college. Freshman year, I was super short, but they had me playing center just because we didn't have anybody tall enough to be able to play the position.
Ah, okay.
And so so yeah, that whole thing. But then another part of what I did too was I played small forward my sophomore year of high school because I started learning how to dribble.
Okay. I was a center or a forward, so yeah, I know the feeling. But what got you into poetry technically?
What got me into poetry was in the general sense, what got me into poetry was I started noticing how girls were attractive around me. And so I started writing poems because I was always like big into R&B and stuff like that. Like when, like before games, like a bunch of my friends would be listening to like this hardcore hip hop or something like that. And that was never really my style. So I would be the one who'd be bumping like, cause I'm trying to think high school, who was R&B artists at the time, like Neo, okay. Chris Brown,
Some of the
90s
stuff.
Yeah, man, I'm trying to think. And I love 90s too. I just didn't have it. Because, I mean, this is like in the era where like people had iPods and yes. iPhones weren't really a thing.
Oh, okay. You're talking about the early 2000s.
Yeah, because I graduated in 2010. And so, okay. like, iPhone, because like the Poppin' Phone was Sidekick.
Yes.
It wasn't iPhone. Sidekick was what everybody wanted. Everybody wanted T-Mobile because they wanted to get on that Sidekick hit. And for all the people who couldn't afford it, they just went to Metro.
Yeah.
And so, but nah, man. And so, like, just my love of R&B and my love of creating, because like I used to draw a lot, and then I transitioned from drawing to like making comics. And then I stopped worrying as much as about the drawing and more about the story I was telling in the comic. So yeah, like that was kind of the start of where poetry began, was like this love of this like lovey dovey romantic music. So I'd write all this like lovey dovey poetry for girls that I'd never share. And then it inevitably transitioned and grew when I was in college And after the passing of one of my friends, I shared a poem at a open mic at my college. And then from there, our campus pastor had asked me, like, hey, yo, Brandon, would you be willing to share a poem at chapel? And I was like, yeah, sure. The poem I had written was like 3 minutes, 45 seconds, maybe 4 minutes tops when I was doing it. And then when I went up on stage to go do it, I'd done in like 2 minutes and 30 seconds because I was so nervous. I was like flying through that piece. yeah, man, it was cool. Like, and everybody gave me props and told me, like, oh, great job, great job. And so, like, those are pretty much like the origins of where it began.
And I noticed that was you said I've heard in another interview you had that poetry was more of a side thing, whereas basketball became the front because of, you know, the respect and stuff you got from your peers. So, and then basketball took a sideline because of a bill that you got. What was that bill about?
Oh, a bill that I got. Actually, why basketball took a sideline. But I will explain that. A few weeks before my sophomore year of college, I got a phone call from Simpson saying that I owed like $9,000 or some outrageous number like that. And I was like, okay, so I can't come back until that's taken care of. They're like, unfortunately, no. And I'm like, all right, well, we're gonna have to figure out something because I gotta come back. Talked to him about it, and I was like, all right, cool. Well, let's do like a monthly plan. They're like, well, the longest one we do is 10 months, and like that's $900 a month. Nobody has a spare $900 a month in my tax bracket to just throw at something and be like, oh, fun. Yeah, man, inevitably what ended up happening was I got so upset. My uncle was like, yo, Brandon, man, if you want to get back there, then like, have you prayed about it at all? I said, nah, I haven't. He said, pray. And I was like, all right. And so got real angry, and I just got real honest with God. I was like, yo, God, I never wanted to go to Simpson. I went there as like a last resort. And then when I finally got there and I embraced it, I enjoyed it, and now I can't go back. So, like, if you want me there, you got to make a way. And then, like, a few days later, I got a phone call from Simpson, and they were like, hey, yo, so, like, we wanted to let you know that we were able to adjust your financial aid reward due to some paperwork you had just filed, and we were going to give you $7,500. And I was like, wait, what? And they're like, yeah, we got you covered for that. And I was like, yo, that's crazy. Because I just had a check for $1,500 from a scholarship get sent to you guys yesterday. And they're like, oh, yeah, it was on your financial aid reward letter last year. Well, your $9,000 is covered. Congratulations. And I had done like some fundraising and some money stuff to try and like, you know, raise the funds I would need.
Yeah.
And I had only gotten like $500 or $600. And when I showed up for like the first day of sophomore year, I went to the bookstore to go buy my books, and they're like, yeah, you're like, your book total comes out to like $495. And so like I was able to buy all my books for the semester and have everything else covered. And like that was like one of the biggest moments where like I knew that, like, God was like divinely orchestrating some of the stuff that was like all the stuff that was going down in my life. And even utilizing my choices in the midst of that.
But lesson there.
For in terms of like putting basketball on the sidelines, it was that moment. But it was also a series of events throughout the course of my sophomore year where like I was like, man, like, I just don't know if basketball is it for me. Because like my first year, I didn't get to play the way I wanted to play because I wasn't technically recruited to come for the team. I had to walk on, but I made the team. And then the second year, I got a scholarship to be on the team. But the coach who gave me the scholarship retired, and a new coach came in, and his two kids came with him. And one of them played my position. And so I ended up not playing at like pretty much at all, in spite of the fact that like a bunch of people who were on the team with me were like, yo, like Brandon like has dramatically improved and like he's gonna be like a problem for people next season when he's out there playing. And so it was a it was those frustrations, a lot of prayer and thought goes and went into it. And then I elected to leave Hoop. And after I left Hoop, I was like, yo, God, what do you want me to do? Because this is a, you know, I have all this spare time and energy now that I usually spent on the court, in the weight room, doing something basketball related. And that's when poetry reestablished itself as a key figure in my life. And I started what is now entitled Called to Move, which is like my business in which we like host poetry workshops, do like at schools and like prisons and things of that nature. We host we host open mics on occasions. And we also do like tours and things to that in terms of assisting other artists and trying to become the best version of themselves that they can be. And so that's when like we got started with that and like hosted our first open mic. We had like maybe 15 people at that open mic. Like it was super small, not many people there. And then our last one, we had completely filled our cafeteria with like 300 people who had showed up wanting to participate and be a part of what we were doing. And it was super dope to be a part of, man, and like to really try and push something into the culture that way. So, yeah.
So Call the Move was basically formed in 2012.
Yeah, 2012, 2013.
Is it, I'm assuming more than just you, is you got some other friends also involved in the, I know you said you had a group in there.
There's a group of like us artistic misfits, because, you know, like in church culture, it's not always super popular to it's not always super popular to like give people the platform, necessarily, you know what I mean? And so they like we had a lot of people who were just kind of like on the outskirts of everything that we were doing. Like we had dancers who never really had a spot to be able to go show their abilities. We had singers who weren't like the, who didn't like sing in like the particular brand that people were like, you know, used to or whatever. We had painters who didn't really have a spot to really display their artwork. And so like what Called to Move became was just this place where people could come and, people could come and in the midst of being there, they could feel at home and show what they had. And we became like a small family of like these weirdos on campus, essentially.
A little bit like collective.
That's cool. Yeah. And it was a whole lot of fun.
And you graduated when?
I graduated 2014. Oh, wow. And so that is that was a fun time. I do not long to go back to it. I used to really miss college. Like I used to miss just like the camaraderie of being able to like walk next door to somebody, like walk next door and like instantly see somebody I know.
Right.
Yeah, I don't miss that anymore. I enjoy being at home with my wife and like not having this insatiable need to go chase after people.
Yeah, I can see that. So you came out with a psychology degree, but you also have a minor in English. So yeah. I think that's funny that you have a minor in English as more than the psychology degree is more for. Is it a particular thing you're trying to find out from psychology, trying to understand the mindset of things, or just try to be aware, or just you just felt like that was a cool degree to have?
Man, if I'm being honest with you, I went into psychology. I started off as an English major, which is why I got that psychology degree.
Right.
and I transitioned to psychology. And the reason why is because I just couldn't stand my English teacher. He talked like the Visine guy from the old commercials, and he would never let anybody else in the class read. And so I was just like, I was just so incredibly bored in class. I fell asleep one day. and from there I was like, okay, I just can't do this anymore. So I walked it. Like, I literally woke, like my face hit the keyboard of my laptop. I woke up in that moment and I stood up and I said, I can't do this. Walked out of the classroom and walked to my counselor's office and said, yo, what can we do?
Oh, dang.
This is not the way. This is not what I'm trying to, this is not what I'm trying to do. And she was like, well, like, you said that you wanted to be a psychology major. And I was like, yeah. She was like, well, we can work on that. And I was like, okay, cool. Let's work on that. And so, from there, it was just, from there, the real thing that happened was I wanted to be a psychologist. I was like, yeah, like, I want to, like, be a therapist, help people, like, you know, heal from their wounds. And I realized, like, psychologists are people who just, like, really sit down and listen to other people.
Right.
And I was like, yeah, that type of one-way relationship, I don't think I'd be healthy enough to do, personally. I think I would have to, I think I'd have to have some type of more mutually exchanging relationship in order for me to come home and feel healthy. And so just realizing and recognizing that about myself, I told my counselor, I'm like, yo, I'm not going to be able to be a psychologist because it's not going to be beneficial for myself or anybody who I love or care about. And she was like, well, you don't have to be a psychologist with a psychology degree. You could do a bunch of things. You could, like, do social services. You could be become a teacher and all this other stuff. And I was like, well, yo, if I could do all this stuff with it, then I'm willing to go out and do something else. It's just, I can't do this psychology thing. She was like, okay, cool. Well, you're good. So let that one go. And okay. Still got the degree.
Okay, so mostly the degree of just a door for you to open up is the key to open up other doors. Okay, yeah, I can see that. So you went back. So you went back to Stockton in 2014 and 2015 time. What were you doing during that between those times?
I unwillingly went back to Stockton. I want to make sure that portion is known. I love being in my city now, but the way I ended up back here was under pretty bad circumstances. I was dating a girl from my sophomore year of college to the end of my senior year, going into her senior year. And over the summer, we had broken up. And after we broke up, the job I was at, I got fired from. I couldn't afford to stay at my apartment for my lease anymore because unemployment. Since I got fired, my job denied my unemployment, so I couldn't afford to stay in Reading. So I had to renege on my lease, pack all my stuff up, and at the age of 22, back into a bedroom with my, at the time, 8-year-old little brother.
Oh, okay. I didn't know you had another sibling. I thought you only had your sister, bless her soul. I didn't know you had another brother.
A lot of people know I have a little brother, and I think part of it is because I just don't talk about him much.
Yeah.
But also, there's not really a whole lot to talk about in the artistic realm about him. He's not necessarily very much into it. My little brother, like, loves NASCAR and stuff like that.
Nice.
So, a bunch of stuff that I'm completely unfamiliar with. And he, since he's in school and venues don't really enjoy giving poets top billing, we're always on weekdays or on, like, Sundays. We never get Friday or Saturday for venue choices, really. Right. And so he has school the next day. Stockton doesn't have a whole lot of shows that he can come participate in, and so it's a
that's kind of interesting. No, yeah, I never knew you had a brother and stuff, but now that I know, it's interesting. I've always heard the sister, but I never heard the little brother. But yeah, so you back to Stockton? I already moved. I was already over in the Lincoln High area, so I know that area very. I know I've been in Stockton for almost 15 years by that time, so I was like, yeah, I know this place. And it was taking its toll. It was going through a transition during that time, so I understand. But what got you? Did you start doing shows in Stockton in 2014?
Man, I didn't. There was no shows in Stockton in 2014. I even tried to book like a small little tour, like around the state of California. But like when I say like divinely orchestrated, like for like a very specific period of time in my life, like God knew dang well I didn't need to do anything. So like I had booked this whole like 8-city tour throughout Cali, and I like 2 weeks before the tour started, I reached out to all the venues, and all of them forgot that they booked me. And so like I essentially didn't have a tour after that. I didn't do any poetry for pretty much about a year, because I just needed some time and some space to emotionally heal from what I had gone through with the breakup of me and my ex, and trying to just get my mind and spirit right around that whole thing. And so, and also like the disappointment of like, I never imagined at 22 I'd be having to move back into my mom's house. Like, you know, when you graduate from college and you're done with that whole thing, you know, like in the movies, like the person gets a job, everything's going pretty decently well, you know, they find themselves like a girlfriend, they get married, and you know, they save up enough money to go get a house and that whole thing. And yeah, I was in the midst of not the romantic comedy I signed up for.
Dang. But I see there. So what, so that, and there, here's a question then. So through that whole year trying to build something, what made you come to Sacramento then?
Man, 2015, I finally had a mentor of mine. He was like, yo, Brandon, like, I feel like, you know, like now is a good time for you to like get back to some things that you love. You know, you have to start finding yourself again. And so I was like, okay. Well, I had already, during my senior year of college, come down to Sacramento to come do an event with Terry Moore.
Okay.
And so I had done an event with him. So I came down in 2015, did an event with him. And I had met somebody named Jenny Lynn. She said, yo, like, we host a slam at a place called Luna's, on like what, second Thursdays or whatever.
Right.
I was like, all right, awesome. But I was horrible with dates, so I never remembered when they hosted it. But I knew that there's an open mic called Midtown Out Loud hosted at this place called Shine every Wednesday.
Shout out.
Problem was, the job I worked didn't let me off until 5. And Midtown Out Loud had a line out the woo-wop to get on the list. The person who hosted it would never go down the list in the proper order. Yeah. She would always just pick randomly. And so, like, there'd be nights where, like, you would be on the list, like, you'd show up on time, and then you wouldn't be going up until, like, 2 people before the show's over.
Yeah.
And so... So I went to Sacramento just to find culture and poetically, because there just wasn't any of it in Stockton. Like, we didn't have any shows going on at that time.
Oh, okay. And then from coming inside, in and out and stuff, and getting kind of, well, there's a question. Then why wouldn't you not go to Modesto? I know Modesto has the Queen Bee and stuff. It was just a far distance.
Did. Thing, so. I did go to Modesto.
Oh, okay.
And I went there. And but they only host theirs once a month.
That is true. I forgot about that.
So for me, it was just like I had this abundance of free time, and I'm like, man, all right, you know, I don't want to have to wait to only go once a month. And at this point in time, I'm writing poems like daily, sometimes writing multiple poems a day. And I'm like, yo, I want to go share and get feedback on my stuff. So like trying to have something weekly was awesome for me to like get my mind off of things that I didn't want to think about. Oh. So I'd go to Modesto monthly. I'd go to Sacramento monthly. I even ventured out to the Bay Area a couple times. But Bay Area was just way too much gas money, way too much time for somebody who had to be at a 9 to 5, an 8 to 5 the next day, trying to journey back from San Francisco at like 2 in the morning.
So I assume that Mahogany became a good spot to hit too. Around like,
yeah, I had found out about Mahogany, and like there was this like the way my friend talked about it, she was like, yo, like only the best of the best go to this place. Like in order to hit a Mahogany stage, like you have to be at like a certain caliber poet in order to like hop on stage. And I was like, oh snap. So like I never went for like 2 months, like 2-3 months, because I was like, man, like I want to make sure like when I have a poem ready, like I'm ready. And the day before I ever went to Mahogany, one of the another place that I went was Penny for Your Thoughts.
Most definitely.
When Dre T was hosting it in Sacramento. So like Mahogany, Brick House, Luna's, Midtown Out Loud, that was held at Shine.
You got all the spots.
Yeah, I'm trying to think. Oh yeah, Terry Moore over at Laughs Unlimited. Like, those are all the places where I went to go grow.
Okay. And then what got you in going on to the poetry team?
Man, to be honest with you, when it came to joining the Poetry Slam stuff, it was a pure fluke. I had showed up to Luna's because I had run into Ike at a tournament for a Terry Moore event, and he had taken second place to Supernova, aka Noah Hayes. I was like, yo, I want to beat Ike. So I had gone because I knew he was going to be competing, and I went and I slammed, and I didn't realize it was even a slam. I just wanted to like go and hear him, and I wanted to go spit and see if people thought my poem was better. And then it turned out to be a slam. I had enough material to be able to compete in the slam. I think I took like 3rd place at the slam. Ike, of course, took 1st. I believe David took 2nd, and then I took 3rd. Because Shonuff didn't participate, and he was the host. But I had done that, and they're like, hey, you're our alternate for the team this year. Congratulations. You're on the squad. And I was like, all right, cool. Whatever that means. And so I was super excited to be the alternate. I was showing up to all the practices. And another person who made the team never showed up to any of the practices. And so like a month into it, they're like, hey, yo, Brandon, guess what? You're no longer alternate. You are main member, and you're the only one who's a part of like any type of team piece. And in fact, you're a part of pretty much everybody's team piece. So yeah.
Could I have seen the footage with you and Jenny Lynn doing that piece you did? And I was like, oh, okay. That was interesting. And then also the one you and David does, the Goku versus Batman, was always a charmer and stuff. So yeah.
Yeah, man. Goku versus Superman. Everybody always asks for that. And we've retired that poem. I don't even have a copy of it anymore. I don't think David does either. Actually, I know I do. I just don't know where I put it. When me and David go on tour, we may like hilarious, like we may like out of like pure spite do it on the road one day just for the fun of it. Or we might like edit it and make it like a better poem or something and like make it super nerdy. And once again, like this comes back down to like my whole hunger thing. Like I had a team piece with David, I had a team piece with Ike and David. had a team piece with Jenny, and I had a team piece with Show. And so, like, any team piece we did, I was a part of. And so it became a, it was fun. It was fun. Because, like, I just wanted to challenge myself to write more, to do more, participate more. So, yeah, it was a whole lot happening at one time, but it was a beautiful thing.
And this was at the Oakland competition tournament.
Yes, so this was the time in which we did not have to drive all that far or fly anywhere, because there was a serious, like, the following year, it was in Chicago or something like that, right. And there were serious fears about us not being able to compete because you'd have to fly, get a hotel, food, transportation, and all that stuff. Whereas Oakland, we got super cheap hotel. We pretty much brought our own food. And yeah.
Okay. And as you pointed out, that it's been, you didn't think of Slam. You saw Slam when you went to it. It changed your perspective of how Poetry Slam was and stuff.
Oh, yeah. When I went to National Poetry Slam, it gave me a window into the poetry world that I had only ever seen online. Because when I was in college, the thing that happened was everybody told me, like, oh, yo, Brandon, like, you're such a great poet. Like, we love it. Like, you do such a great job. And I was like, oh, thanks. I appreciate it. But the thing about praise is, if there's never any critique, there's not a whole lot of growth that'll occur from it. And so for myself, I inevitably got to a point where I was like, yo, I need competition in order to improve. And for myself, the way I saw competition was, I was like, all right, well, let me log on and look at poems from other people online and compete that way.
Okay.
Got a hungry baby again. and so I started listening to poets like Rudy Francisco, Prentice Powell, Sarah Kay, R.J. Walker, Neil Hedberg, like these type of people. I started listening to them, and it became my source of competition, my fuel, if you will, to try and push myself further, to be better. And I was like, all right, awesome. Let's figure this out. And it really spurred me on to try and outdo them in a way, and to try and outdo myself in a more realistic way. Because I knew that these people had years in a game ahead of me. And I was like, yo, how do you make up for all of that lost time? Well, they don't know you're coming, so you just continue to push. And because my inevitable goal was, I was like, yo, I want to beat Rudy Francisco in a slam. Like, oh, that really? Was my real goal for like a really long time. I was like, yo, I'm going to beat Rudy Francisco one of these days. And has that ever happened? No, but does that mean that it can't happen? No, it's just one of those things where the competition that I had from basketball is what fueled me to be a better hooper. And I knew that that could be the same type of motivation and fuel that could fuel me to be a better poet.
So Rudy Francisco is technically what your Durant that you've been trying to get at?
Something like that, man. Like, I stole so much from him for, like, so long until I was able to find my voice. And, like, I think a lot of people are afraid to admit that, like, they've been inspired by other people. And I'm just like, yo, man, like, I didn't know my voice poetically. So I just took from other people. And the person who I saw do poetry in a way that I felt was like the best was him. And so I was like, all right, cool. Well, let me learn how to steal like an artist and be able to incorporate what, like, incorporate what he does into, or technically at this time, incorporate what I do into his style until I figure out a way to be able to find my own style. And then when I found my own style, I began to start taking from artists in different ways. I began to, instead of trying to sound like them, I started to take the skills that they had and apply them to who I was and what voice I had. So,
have you met him?
Yeah, I've met Rudy a couple times. Would he ever know that we met is probably a for sure no. But, you know, that's the name of the game.
That was part one of our two-part interview with Brandon Lee. Stay tuned for the second part of the interview.
For more information, please go to linktr.ee/iambiczine. IAMBICZINE. Thank you.